This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will be a question session reviewing multiple choice questions related to complex regional pain syndrome and metastatic disease of the spine, which are two topics that we covered this past week on the podcast. So let's get right into it. We'll start with complex regional pain syndrome. And the first question reads, Level 1 evidence has shown vitamin C reduces the incidence of reflex sympathetic dystrophy or complex regional pain syndrome type 1 in patients with which of the following? And the choices are 1, tarsal tunnel syndrome, 2, distal radius fractures, 3, carpal tunnel syndrome, 4, cervical radiculopathy from herniated nucleus pulposus, and 5, ankle fractures. So, two different prospective double-blind studies performed by the same institution have shown that vitamin C administration is associated with a lower risk of complex regional pain syndrome after wrist fractures. Vitamin C is thought to reduce lipid peroxidation, scavenge free hydroxyl radicals, protect the capillary endothelium, and inhibit vascular permeability. The first trial by Zollinger was published in Lancet and included 115 adults with 119 fractures treated with conservative management, and they found that complex regional pain syndrome occurred in 4, that is 7% of the risks in the vitamin C group, which entailed 500 milligrams daily for 50 days, and 14, or 22%, in the placebo group. The second trial by Zollinger, published in JBJS, included 317 adult patients sustaining 328 distal radius fractures treated conservatively. They had allocated treatment groups to 200 milligrams, 500 milligrams, or 1500 milligrams of vitamin C dosages for 50 days. Complex regional pain syndrome occurrence was 4.2% in the 200 milligram group, 1.8% in the 500 milligram group, and 1.7% in the 1500 milligram group, and thus the 500 milligram dosage for 50 days was recommended at the conclusion of their study. Patients making early cast-related complaints to their provider had a higher incidence of developing complex regional pain syndrome. It should be noted that a recent double-blinded randomized controlled trial by Eckroll et al. Found no statistical significant benefit of vitamin C on the outcome of distal radius fractures. Next question. A 38-year-old patient presents 6 months after intramedullary nailing of a distal third tibia fracture with symptoms consistent with complex regional pain syndrome. During the early stage of the disease, he was treated with intermittent splinting, elevation and massage, contrast baths, and transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation. Despite these modalities, he continues to have severe and debilitating symptoms. Which of the following treatment options is indicated as a second line of treatment? And the choices are 1, long leg cast immobilization for 3 months, 2, walking boot with non-weight bearing for 3 months, 3, exchange nailing to stimulate healing response to the limb, 4, epidural spinal cord stimulator, and 5, surgical sympathectomy of the affected limb. So again, complex regional pain syndrome is a chronic progressive disease of unknown etiology characterized by pain, swelling, and skin changes. If non-operative modalities fail, a surgical sympathectomy of the affected limb is indicated. So the correct answer to this question is 5, surgical sympathectomy of the affected limb. The first line of treatment is physical therapy, including intermittent splinting, elevation and massage, contrast baths, and transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation. Aggressive passive range of motion exercises should be avoided. If non-operative modalities fail and symptoms remain severe, a surgical sympathectomy of the affected limb is indicated. Keys to successful treatment include early clinical suspicion and treatment. Late complex regional pain syndrome is highly refractory to treatment and often results in permanent disability. Two forms of complex regional pain syndrome exist. 1, reflex sympathetic dystrophy, which does not demonstrate nerve lesions, and 2, causalgia, which is associated with damage to peripheral nerves. Diagnostic criteria include major criteria, which is characterized by intense and prolonged pain, swelling, stiffness, and discoloration, suggesting vasomotor disturbances. And the minor criteria, which is characterized by trophic changes, osseous demineralization, temperature changes, and palmar fibromatosis. Tran et al. Present their systematic review of 41 randomized controlled trials of the research regarding treatment of complex regional pain syndrome. Their data suggests that only bisphosphonates offer clear medicinal benefits in the treatment of complex regional pain syndrome. Evidence regarding a beneficial effect of lumbar sympathetic blocks, gabapentin, and physical therapy is lacking. As such, these authors advocate for further study through well-designed randomized clinical trials to better evaluate appropriate and effective treatment strategies. Moving on to the next question, which of the following modalities has been shown to have a positive effect when treating early stages of complex regional pain syndrome? And the choices are 1, casting of the involved extremity, 2, plyometric exercises, 3, ultrasound therapy, 4, acupuncture, and 5, gentle physiotherapy. So complex regional pain syndrome type 1, also known as reflex sympathetic dystrophy, is defined as a disease that develops after an initial noxious or painful event, which causes the development of pain and dysfunction out of proportion to the event. It sometimes cannot be linked to a specific physiologic process. Hyperesthesias, edema, and/or blood flow changes are prevalent. Type 2, also known as causalgia, has a known identifiable nerve injury. Hypotheses include increased sympathetic tone causes a feedback loop, activation of nociceptors to neurons in the spinal cord, continued ischemia, reactivation of pain receptors, and possibly unregulated sensitivity of alpha adrenergic receptors. For treatment, early gentle physiotherapy is recommended for this condition. So answer choice 5, gentle physiotherapy, is the correct answer to this question. Aggressive passive range of motion is contraindicated in the early phases because it will just provoke pain and inflammation. The primary goal of therapy is to decrease pain and prevent stiffness. Contrast baths can help desensitize and improve blood flow, and TENS units, that is a transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulator, has been shown to have a positive outcome on complex regional pain syndrome type 2 only, which again are those with identifiable nerve lesions. Moving on to the next question, all of the following are clinical features of complex regional pain syndrome or reflex sympathetic dystrophy of the lower extremity, except, and the choices are 1, swelling, 2, cool and shiny skin, 3, allodynia, 4, crepitus, and 5, hyperpathia. So swelling, cool and shiny skin, allodynia, and hyperpathia are all clinical features of complex regional pain syndrome. Crepitus, however, is not a clinical feature. And the final question, what is the most common radiographic finding in reflex sympathetic dystrophy or complex regional pain syndrome of the knee? And the choices are 1, patella baja, 2, patella alta, 3, patella osteopenia, 4, generalized osteopenia, and 5, supracondylar stress fracture. So reflex sympathetic dystrophy of the knee is different than that of the upper extremity. Pain out of proportion to the initial injury is the hallmark symptom. Other features include vasomotor disturbance, delayed functional recovery, and various associated trophic changes. The JAAOS article by Cooper et al. States that patellar osteopenia is the most common radiographic finding. However, they go on to state that the most reliable diagnostic test is symptom relief after sympathetic blockade. The JBJS article by Cooper et al. Treated 14 patients with reflex sympathetic dystrophy of the knee with epidural blocks for 4 days. 11 patients had complete resolution of their symptoms, and pain that was out of proportion to the severity of the injury was the most consistent finding. Katz et al. Reviewed 36 patients with reflex sympathetic dystrophy, primarily affecting the knee. They found that injuries or operation about the patellofemoral joint triggered its onset in 64% of patients. But the correct answer to this question is 3, patello-osteopenia is the most common radiographic finding in reflex sympathetic dystrophy or complex regional pain syndrome of the knee. Moving on to the next topic of metastatic disease of the spine, the first question reads, which of the following metastatic tumors should be treated with embolization prior to surgical management? And the choices are 1, renal and thyroid, 2, breast and renal, 3, liver and breast, 4, lung and colon, and 5, prostate and thyroid. So renal and thyroid tumors are considered hypervascular lesions and should be considered for treatment with preoperative embolization. So that makes choice 1, renal and thyroid, the correct answer to this question. The main indication for embolization of hypervascular tumors is to reduce intraoperative and postoperative blood loss. The aim of embolization is the exclusion of the tumor capillary bed, not the major arterial feeder. as occluding the major vessel supplying the tumor will lead to revascularization of the tumor due to numerous collaterals in hypervascular bone tumors. Liquid embolization agents include glue, absolute alcohol, sodium tetradecyl sulfate, and particulate agents include Embosphere, polyvinyl alcohol particles, and gel foam. Ito et al. Looked at the role of VEGF in thyroid tumor angiogenesis. VEGF was not detected in normal thyroid follicular cells and weakly detectable in benign follicular adenoma and adenomatous goiters. However, in malignant thyroid tumors, it was strongly expressed. They conclude that VEGF is expressed in the hyperplastic thyroid tissues and is a marker for transformation and differentiation state of malignant tumors. Cernok et al. Used three different preoperative embolization techniques in 46 patients with metastatic spinal tumors and compared intraoperative blood loss. Overall, 33% of tumors undergoing embolization were renal cell carcinoma. They found no statistically significant difference regarding blood loss between coils, particles, or a combination of both. Moving on to the next question. A patient of yours with known metastatic breast cancer recently recovered from a vertebral compression fracture that you treated non-operatively. She asks you about zoledronic acid, a drug that one of her friends takes for multiple myeloma. You tell her that there is good evidence that, and the choices are 1, she has a 25% chance of developing osteonecrosis of the jaw while taking zoledronic acid, 2, zoledronic acid will not reduce her pain but may have other benefits, 3, with zoledronic acid treatment, she will have a significant reduction in risk of pathologic fractures, need for radiotherapy, need for orthopedic surgery, spinal cord compression, and hypercalcemia. 4, renal impairment will not affect her ability to take zoledronic acid. And 5, zoledronic acid is significantly less effective than pimidronate at reducing skeletal-related events. So zoledronic acid treatment results in a 30 to 40% decrease in skeletal-related events. So things like risk of pathologic fractures, need for radiotherapy, need for orthopedic surgery, spinal cord compression, and hypercalcemia. Bisphosphonates, such as zoledronic acid, reduce skeletal morbidity in patients with metastatic bone disease. Other benefits include correction of hypercalcemia and treatment of malignancy-induced osteopenia. 50% of patients experience a clinically significant reduction in pain. Bode reviews the role of bisphosphonates in the treatment of metastatic bone disease related to breast cancer. They note that metastatic bone disease can significantly adversely affect quality of life in cancer patients. In breast cancer, the skeleton is the most common site of metastasis and the most common first site of distant relapse. Patients with bony metastases alone have a higher rate of skeletal-related events than those with bony and visceral metastases and may benefit from bisphosphonate therapy. Bedard et al. Provide a commentary on the role of bisphosphonates in breast cancer in light of the publication of the results of the Austrian Breast and Colorectal Cancer Study Group, otherwise known as the ABCSG-12 trial, and the results of this study suggest that the addition of a nitrogen-containing bisphosphonate improves long-term outcome in early-stage breast cancer, potentially opening the door to new roles for bisphosphonate treatment. Some other quick things to know about zoledronic acid treatment is that there is a 2.5% chance of jaw osteonecrosis, 50% of patients will experience a decrease in pain, renal toxicity is a known issue with zoledronic acid, and renal function should be assayed prior to treatment, and dosing should be adjusted based on creatinine clearance. And finally, zoledronic acid was found to be significantly more effective than pimidronate in a randomized trial. So the correct answer to this question is 3, with zoledronic acid treatment, this patient will have a significant reduction in risk of pathologic fractures, need for radiotherapy, need for orthopedic surgery, spinal cord compression, and hypercalcemia. Moving on to the next question, a 66-year-old man reports a 2-week history of worsening lower back and leg pain. He reports that his pain is aggravated by lying down and relieved by standing and walking. He notes that he has been losing weight recently and his pain has been waking him up at night. His medical history is significant for hypertension, coronary artery disease, and prostate cancer. His physical examination is essentially unremarkable. Lumbar radiographs are within normal limits. What is the most appropriate management for this patient? And the choices are 1, MRI of the chest, 2, laboratory studies including a complete blood cell count, erythrocyte sedimentation rate, urinalysis, PSA, and a CEA. 3, activity alterations to avoid undue back irritation. 4, comfort measures, including medications. And 5, spinal manipulative therapy within the first 6 weeks. So in the initial assessment of acute low back pain in adults, no diagnostic testing is indicated during the first 4 weeks in the absence of red flags for a serious underlying condition. The purpose of the initial assessment of acute low back pain in adults is to rule out serious underlying conditions presenting as low back pain. The Agency for Healthcare Policy and Research, in its 1994 Clinical Practice Guidelines, identified 4 serious conditions that may present with low back pain, including fracture, tumor, infection, and Cauda equina syndrome. This patient has 5 red flags for spinal tumor as a possible etiology of his low back pain, including age older than 50 years old, constitutional symptoms with the recent weight loss, pain worse when supine, severe nighttime pain, and a history of cancer. Of these, his history of cancer is the most significant, as greater than 90% of spinal tumors are metastatic. In order of frequency, breast, prostate, lung, and kidney make up approximately 80% of all secondary spread to the spine. In the presence of red flags for tumor or infection, it is recommended that the clinician obtain a CBC count, ESR, and a urinalysis. If these are within normal limits and suspicion still remains, consider a consultation or seek further evidence with a bone scan, radiographs, or additional laboratory studies. Negative radiographs alone are insufficient to rule out the disease. If radiographs are positive, the anatomy can be better defined with an MRI. So the correct answer to this question is 2, laboratory studies including a complete CBC, ESR, urinalysis, PSA, and a CEA. Moving on to the next question, which of the following is associated with the use of bisphosphonates in the setting of metastatic breast cancer to the spine? And the choices are 1, reduction in skeletal related events by 30-40%, 2, jaw osteonecrosis in 15% of patients, 3, pain improvement in only 30% of patients, 4, improvement in serum hypocalcemia in 40% of patients, and 5, accelerated bone destruction in 10% of patients. So the indications of bisphosphonate therapy in breast cancer patients range from the correction of hypercalcemia to the prevention of cancer treatment-induced bone loss. Bisphosphonates reduced metastatic bone pain in at least 50% of patients and can reduce the frequency of skeletal-related events by 30-40%. Osteonecrosis of the jaw could occur in up to 2.5% of breast cancer patients during long-term bisphosphonate therapy. But the correct answer to this question is 1, reduction in skeletal-related events by 30-40%. Moving on to the next question, you are caring for a 63-year-old female with metastatic breast cancer to the lumbar spine. Her neurological examination shows significant weakness in leg function, and she is having difficulty ambulating. Imaging shows significant neural element compression by the tumor and complete erosion of the L1 vertebra. She has no other sites of metastatic disease and is otherwise healthy. What treatment option do you recommend to best maintain her function? 1, palliative therapy. 2, complete neural element decompression. 3, complete neural element decompression with instrumentation to stabilize the spine. 4, complete neural element decompression, instrumentation, and postoperative chemotherapy. And 5, complete neural element decompression, instrumentation, and postoperative radiotherapy. So declining neurological function in patients with metastatic disease requires treatment. In their landmark study, Patchell et al. Evaluated the treatment of spinal cord compression from metastatic cancer via a randomized, multi-institutional trial that assigned 101 patients to surgery with postoperative radiotherapy versus radiotherapy alone. The primary endpoint was the ability to walk after treatment, and secondary endpoints included urinary continence, muscle strength, functional status, need for corticosteroids and opioid analgesics, and overall survival time. They found that direct neural element decompression plus postoperative radiotherapy was superior to treatment with radiotherapy alone for patients with spinal cord compression caused by metastatic cancer. But the correct answer to this question is 5, complete neural element decompression, instrumentation, and postoperative radiotherapy. Moving on to the next question, a 59-year-old female presents with a metastatic spinal tumor and has a lytic lesion in the T12 vertebral body. The process of bone resorption in her lytic lesion is mediated by, and the choices are 1, direct resorption of bone cells by tumor cells, 2, neoangiogenesis of the vertebral body, 3, macrophage-mediated bone destruction, 4, tumor-induced activation of osteoclasts, and 5, necrosis of the vertebral body. So metastatic tumors are thought to induce osteolysis not by direct resorption of the bone, remember only osteoclasts can destroy bone, but rather by releasing osteoclastogenic inflammatory cytokines. O'Keefe et al. Present a level 5 review that states TNF-alpha, RANK ligand, IL-1B, and IL-6 are osteoclastogenic inflammatory cytokines. Among these, RANK ligand is the most notable and important cytokine. It binds to RANK, a surface receptor, and initiates osteoclastogenesis. Goldsman presents a level 5 review of the skeletal manifestations of malignancy. They report that by binding and neutralizing RANK ligand, osteoprotegrin, or OPG, can diminish the production of functioning osteoclasts, and this factor has been shown to block bone resorption that is associated with malignancy. So again, the correct answer to this question is 4. Tumor-induced activation of osteoclasts is the process of bone resorption in this patient's lytic lesion. And the final question for this topic, which of the following tumors rarely metastasizes to the spine? And the choices are 1, colon, 2, breast, 3, lung, 4, renal, 5, thyroid. So this should be a pretty easy question if you know which tumors most commonly metastasize to the spine. And remember the mnemonic, P.T. Barnum loves kids. P stands for prostate, T stands for thyroid, B stands for breast, L stands for lung, and K stands for kidney or renal. So P.T. Barnum loves kids. This is the acronym to remember for the tumors that most commonly metastasizes to bone or the spine. So in this list, the one that's not included is colon. So the correct answer to this question is colon. So that's all for this question session about complex regional pain syndrome and metastatic disease to the spine. Hopefully that was helpful. Again, this is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.